Are you listening to us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or any other platform where you can leave a rate or review? Do you like what we're doing? If the answer to all of that is yes, please consider quickly giving us a 5-star rate. And if you wouldn't mind leaving us a nice review, we greatly appreciate that as well. Okay, let's do this.
Hello, welcome to the Ghosts of Harrenhal. My name's Simon.
And I'm McKelly.
Thank you for joining us for episode 226 of our chapter-by-chapter book review of A Song of Ice and Fire by George Martin. Today, we'll be discussing the prologue to A Feast for Crows.
And as always, we're going to chat about the chapter and try not to spoil any future plot points, and hopefully we're going to provide you some entertainment along the way.
We will summarize what happened, discuss our thoughts on it, provide some useful background, compare it to the television show, indulge in a little pedantry, and cover some relevant news and listener correspondence. Be sure to check out the show notes that provide some additional information about the characters and geography of this chapter. How are you, McKelly?
I'm doing all right. I'm excited. We got a new book to embark on.
I know. It is exciting. My book is in such pristine condition. I began to wonder if I'd ever actually read it. But when I read the prologue, I was like, oh yeah, I have read this before. This is familiar.
Was it a different copy, maybe?
I wonder if that's true. I wonder if I read a different copy. But it's nice to have one that isn't falling apart.
Yeah. I'm sure before long it will suffer the same fate as the others.
Indeed.
Well, I'm doing all right, all things considered. We're having some plumbing issues in the house as of late. Molly, she wrote a sticky note to me last week that said, I need a new shower head. So I came to her with this and was like, Why are you telling me you need a new shower head? She said, the water in my shower is coming out brownish. I was like, what are you talking about? Show me. Come show me. So she turns on the bathtub water, and sure enough, it's coming out brownish. And I was like, oh, that's not good. So I did some testing, tried cold water only, hot water only, and it was only coming out with the hot water on. So it seems to be a water heater tank issue.
Right.
Plumber comes out, confirms, yes, water tank is dying. Can't say when it will meet its final demise and spill water all through my basement. So he's like, I would get this fixed quickly. So, you know, we have a regular a tank, you know, like traditional style water tank.
Yes.
But there's, you know, the new cool thing to do is to get the tankless water heater, which is like immediate non-stop hot water that you never run out of.
Get the concept? Yes.
Yeah. So we were like, okay, well, why not upgrade to that? It's a pain when all of us are in the house or when we have, you know, a bunch of guests over or whatever. So we had two different plumbers come out and give us quotes, and it was so ridiculously expensive to go with the tankless that we were like, never mind, just give us the old one. So we're just completely replacing the old tank with a new tank. It was 3 times as much to get a tankless than the tank.
But, you know, they're more economical over the long run.
They are, except for that, you know, we are going to be empty nesters here.
Yeah.
And not too far.
But aren't they even more economical in that way when you're not using hot water all the time?
Yeah, well, I guess so. Yeah, it is more cost-effective, I guess, to have the tankless, I believe. Yeah.
Still, I mean, I understand. Believe me, I understand.
Yeah, those quotes were staggering. I could not... Mm-hmm. I asked the plumber that came out. He said, I don't do tankless, so you're going to have to get someone else. Here's some recommendations. I was like, what should we be expecting? His range that we should have been expecting was a full $2,000 less than the quotes that came in.
Even the top end of his range.
Yes. So right. When he came out, when I told him, I texted him and told him, and he was like, wow, that is way more than I thought it was going to be. And he's a plumber. He's in the industry. So, yeah. You know.
So on that same subject, I mentioned this to you earlier. I went to see our local National Hockey League affiliate last night and was stunned at the price of parking.
Do tell.
I I was braced because it's been pre-pandemic since last I went to see them. So I was braced for what it might be. I would think that...
I'll take a guess.
Go on.
I would guess... If I were going to the game, which I went to a game last year, but we had a free parking pass from a friend of ours, so I don't know how much it was. If I were going to a game, I would have expected to pay $15 to $20.
You see, I think not reasonable, but okay would be $10.
Agreed.
Gouging would be $15. I was thinking it's been so long it might be $25. It was $44.0 to park 40. Your car.
$40.
$40.
Wow. And that parking lot is not small. Imagine how much
I was,
they're making.
I was a mile and a half from my seat. I swear, there was street parking closer than I parked.
Wow. Yeah, that's double. I said 15 to 20.
It absolutely boggled my mind. I couldn't speak. I was like, what are you talking about? I threw them the keys. I assumed it was valet included.
You just got out of the car and handed them the keys. No, sir. Nope. Got to get back in. Got to park yourself.
It just blew my mind. It still does to this, even now. You could buy online before you arrived and pay only $25, which is what we did, thankfully. I was like, why are we buying a parking pass for $25? When I got there and saw the sign, I was like, okay, now I see why we're doing that.
Yeah, that's a much better deal. Still a lot of money. Do we sound like a bunch of cheap old guys or what?
I mean, it's so off-putting because I'd love to go and watch more games. And you can get a ticket for like $20 for the nosebleed section.
Right.
But that parking ticket, the thing is, they make it impossible because they put the stadium in the middle of this oceanic parking lot.
Right.
Yeah. The only way to get to the stadium is to park.
You could park somewhere else and then take an Uber or a taxi over to the game.
But anyway... you know what it is? We're just getting old. The youth of today are like, yeah, it's $40 to park. What are you talking about? You know?
Yeah. There's a funny, it's one of those commercials. I can't even remember what the product is for, where it's homeowners who are becoming their parents.
Yeah.
And there's one at like a, it's like a Chipotle Moe's type thing for salads or whatever, you know, and they're going down the aisle and going through the things and what they want on it and stuff. And it gets to the end and they're like $12. The cashier said $12. And he goes, oh, no, I'm just paying for my own.
Yes. I should have said that to the lady. I'm not in caravan with the four cars behind me.
Right.
But my other story, I mean, you know that my family car is a rich vein.
It is. I'm so thankful that you have it.
The one thing that is an absolutely golden thread running through my family calls is how boring we all are. How we have nothing to talk about.
Until 10 seconds of the call.
Well, yeah, there's a bit of that for sure. But it's like, we just don't have anything. And, Michele, you can be honest. Am I a wallflower? Do I hide my achievements?
I'm going to go with no.
No, I don't.
On both of those.
I talk about myself all the time. That's what I do. I mean, on this call, you're literally supposed to do that, but it just plays to my trump card, talking about myself.
Right. Plays to your strengths.
Exactly. So on the call on Sunday, what would I talk about but the fact that we've just finished A Storm of Swords?
Right.
I said,
"Oh yeah, exciting news!"
Michele and I have finished the third book of the series, and next week we'll be starting the fourth book of the series. And my little sister, who's been on, so let's see, this has been going for 4 years now, so roughly 200 calls with me. She said, "What series?"
Oh, what is it? This isn't the sister whose husband listens to us, is it?
No, it's the other sister. It's the other sister.
Okay, I was going to say that is really something.
Yeah. Even that sister, the one whose husband listens, who has no interest, zero interest, she was like, what are you talking about? The books he makes his podcast about. And she went, his podcast is about books? I thought it was about a TV show.
Oh, our families and their lack of interest is something, that's for sure. Oh, well, now she knows.
Yeah, believe me, because she got it from everybody, even the people on the call. I'm normally the enemy on the call. I'm the antagonist of the call.
Sure, because the Peter Baelish. You're the little finger on the call.
Yeah, I treat them with the contempt that they so richly deserve, and they give it back to me in spades. I mean, this is how we operate. I'm fine with it. You know, they don't like me. That's cool. But they piled on with me against my little sister. They were like, what is wrong with you? My brother was like, did you not watch my videos?
That's right. Rob hasn't even been on the show.
It's incredible. So there you are. So our outreach has not reached my own flesh and blood.
So we've got more ground to cover when it comes
apparently. Well, let's do it then. Let's get down to business. How do we leave the world of A Song of Ice and Fire? There's not much to report. If you remember the epilogue of Storm of Swords, Catelyn Stark is alive!
Wow, sort of. Anyway, sort of. She's breathing and moving.
But it doesn't really matter because the prologue of A Feast for Crows has nothing to do with that.
Right.
As often with the prologues, it's kind of new characters, but there's quite a few characters here. So I thought before we started, we'd actually give a list of characters of who's
good
coming
idea.
Up here.
Yeah,
so,
run them down.
The POV characters is a young guy called Pate, which is an unfortunate name, as you'll discover. And he's a novice of the Citadel of Oldtown. Basically, all the characters in the middle list are novices of the Citadel of Oldtown. His friend Mollander is a club-footed novice, and he's big and strong, like his father, who is a knight. Third friend is Rune, or Rooney. Do you have a preference on that?
I was thinking Rune was reading it in my head.
Uh-huh. He's the youngest novice of the group. Then there's Alaris the Sphinx, who's also a novice, but a fine archer, as you'll hear. Then there's Armin, who is an acolyte, which is a rung above the novices. Right. And lastly, Lazy Leo, who's a highborn student. All right, Michele, why don't we give the summary of this one?
Okay. Well, as you mentioned, a group of Citadel students are drinking and having fun in the gardens of the Quill and Tankard in Oldtown. Mollander is throwing apples into the air so that Alaris can shoot them with a bow and arrow. He is very good. Pate watches on, consumed by thoughts of Rosie, the teenage daughter of Emma, can be heard entertaining a man within the inn. Rosie is set to follow her mother's career, but the asking price of a gold dragon has thus far ensured her virtue. Pate is saving his pennies, but is waiting on a man he knows as the alchemist, who might be able to help fast-track Pate's financial and romantic ambitions.
Talk is of dragons. Rune would love to see one, but Armin believes that they were born too late. Dragons are no more. Pate doesn't have much confidence in his own ability to become a maester, but wonders if he now has the skills to become a roving doctor and barber. The money he's been saving up could buy him a donkey, and he and Rosie could take turns riding as they embark on a lifelong Westerosi peregrination.
The alchemist is overdue, however, and Pate begins to doubt whether he's coming at all. It's not unusual for his fortunes to turn sour. He's believed he's gotten lucky when he was assigned to old Archmaester Walgrave with the Ravens, but it turned out to be more of a servant's role with no hope of a presumed black iron link because Walgrave is now too old to award them. That job is delegated to Maester Gorman, who believes Pate to be a thief. So, not so much of a prospect there.
Yeah. Mollander is ready to believe in the return of dragons. Multiple sailors have shared similar stories, but Armin is insistent that it's all fish tales. Meanwhile, Pate's only interested in the golden kind. Alaris and Armin would become maesters. Both are on their way. Rune was still very young. Mollander preferred drinking to reading, so he might not make it. Pate has been 5 years as a novice and has not managed a single link.
Yeah.
Alaris misses his last shot before lending his thoughts on the dragons. He's nicknamed the Sphinx because he's a mixture of ethnicities. Part Dornish, part Summer Islander. He thinks Daenerys, as the last Targaryen, might bring back the dragon with three heads.
They're joined by a man they call Lazy Leo. He's highborn and wealthy and arrogant in exact proportions. He's lost his money gambling, so he's looking for someone to buy him a drink. None of the others are pleased to see him. He abuses them all in turn. Pate is compared to a namesake Spotted Pate the Pig Boy, a character of many ribald stories. Pate hates sharing that name. Leo confirms Alaris' story. The Stormborn Targaryen has hatched three dragons. Archmaester Marwyn believes it too, and the glass candle burning in his chambers only adds to the legitimacy.
Leo thinks it all heralds a period of terror for gods and heroes. The others all decide it's bedtime. All know Pate's love for Rosie. Leo uses that knowledge to torment Pate. Alaris reassures him that Leo is all talk. Pate would love to kill Leo, but Leo is a Tyrell. He'd fail in any attempt and be hung if he succeeded. As dawn breaks, Pate gives up on the alchemist and heads home.
Old Town looks splendid as the bells ring in the dawn. Pate hears followers of R'hllor singing their thanks for the coming of the dawn. He's heard that Stannis has converted and thinks that he'll have to learn the Red Priest's songs if Stannis wins. But his defeat at the Blackwater means that his chances are slim. Stannis is not Pate's. His are also slim.
Yeah.
The alchemist appears. Pate accuses him of being late, but the alchemist didn't want to disturb Pate and his friends, which is actually very considerate of him. The man wants to know if Pate has decided, and sure enough, Pate admits that he is a thief. He has stolen the black iron key from Maester Walgrave's strongbox. It is said to open every door in the citadel.
Pate wants to see the gold. The alchemist wants to see the key. They move somewhere more discreet. The alchemist makes the golden dragon dance across his knuckles before giving it to Pate, who bites it as he's seen others do, but he doesn't know what gold is supposed to taste like. The alchemist demands the key. Pate wants to know what the man is after, but he refuses to say. Pate asks if he can see the man's face, who's been hooded all along. The alchemist obliges. Pate doesn't recognize him. They part, but a few steps away, Pate feels dizzy and collapses. His last thought is of Rosie.
We'll be right back.
Hello, friends. Are you ready to make some unforgettable memories? Well, if so, consider the Marriott Bonvoy program. Discover the perfect destination for your summer getaway and unlock exclusive deals on luxurious accommodations. With our affiliate partnership, you'll enjoy unbeatable savings and a seamless booking experience. Don't let summer slip away. Visit Marriott Bonvoy today and make this vacation season one for the books. Use our Ghosts of Harrenhal affiliate page to check it all out and buy Bonvoy points or give some as a gift. The link to our page is in the show notes. Well, isn't that sweet?
Yeah.
His last thought is of his love.
Yeah. But does she know?
No. Probably. Well, I think women have a way of knowing these kind of things.
Yeah. But is it just like an expectation that all men are in love with them?
That might be that. It could be.
If I'm going to say, from my vantage point, if I was a woman, I would be like, yeah, they're all in love with me. They right. can't help themselves. So what do we think of Pate's chances with Rosie? I do think towards the end of the chapter, he came up with the right idea. Rather than save up for a golden dragon to buy her virtue, he should take her away from it. It's very unlikely she wants that life.
Right.
You know, and being young and able to travel the kingdom, she might be up for that.
Yeah.
He should have gone with that.
A couple things. One, his idea of them sharing the donkey as they travel across Westeros. If his relationship with Rosie is anything like mine with my wife's, probably don't anticipate a 50-50 ride share there.
You're sharing the donkey in the sense that she has its back while you have its mouth.
Yeah. Yes. That was my first thought when he thought, and we'll share the donkey as we make our way. I was like, I don't know. Maybe don't bank on that if your relationship's anything like mine. But yeah, I think Pate completely is misguided thinking that he can buy Rosie's love.
Yeah.
With this, you know, that he's going to buy her the time with her to, you know, deflower her, I guess, is what he's, you know, that's the point of the coin, I guess. And that doing that will cause her to fall in love with him, and they will go, you know, around together, traveling around Westeros.
Perhaps his hope is that he can sort of like roll it all into one thing. He gives her the gold coin. He gets the deflowering, and then he's like, why don't you keep that gold coin and come with me?
We'll spend it on a donkey and travel.
Exactly. And you can ride it for at least half the time.
Yeah, you know, it's a little bit, you know, it's likely he's just romanticizing what could amount to a business transaction. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah. He's the Tyrion of the prologue.
Yes, as I was just about to say, not unlike Tyrion and Shay, you know, where he was never sure whether it was love or a business deal between the two of them. You know, now he seems to know Rosie. She let him rub her feet before,
yes.
And you know, so I don't know.
And she liked that. She giggled.
Right. So I just think he was thinking he's young. Well, he's not that young. He's like 18. He's older than King Rob was, but I just think he was misguided in thinking that if he gets this gold coin, that he and Rosie will fall in love and go about their lives together. Anyway, that's my thought on poor Pate and his love for Rosie.
I don't know where you're going with this next thing in the notes, but you said Alaris might be in the wrong business?
Yeah, so I'm just saying, he seems like a guy that society would want to be procreating. He does seem to have talent for being a maester. He's got he's already forged three links, and I think he's only been there a year and he's already forged three links, so he's off to a running start.
Yep.
But for the good of the realm, I just don't recommend it. He's got too much going for him not to reproduce. He's smart. We get a bit of a description of him. He sounds very good looking. He's athletic, or at least a very talented archer. It would just be a shame to waste such genetics by them ending with him. If I were advising him, and he's from Dorne, so he might get my reference here. I would suggest that he follows the path of Oberyn Martell. Stay at the Citadel, earn some links, get some knowledge, and then leave and go live your life, not in the maester fashion.
Well, that's fascinating. I've had man crushes myself, but not usually with book characters. So it's interesting to discover.
You've got your Shay. I apparently have my Alaris. He just seemed like when Pate was describing him, he seemed like a kind of guy who has it all, you know? He's always laughing and smiling and joking, so it seems like he's got a good personality and intelligence and looks. So
I wanted to, I think we might have talked about nominative determinism before on this podcast, the sense that your name dictates your future. And Pate,
right. Yeah.
Leo has teased Pate about the fact that he shares his name with Spotted Pate the pig boy, who is this character of stories. And Leo has actually said that at one point in the past, Pate said that he wouldn't always be a novice. And Leo said, no, you'll be a former novice who's now a pig farmer.
Right. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Cruel. Leo's cruel. Yeah,
it is cruel. But so the question is Pate... Obviously, we now know that Pate isn't going to end up as anything because Pate is going to die before the end of this chapter. But was his fate influenced by the fact that he shared a name with a character who had a poor story?
Yeah, I see where you're coming from. Yeah, that now, you know, we've actually, especially if you're from the Riverlands, it seems like every third man is named Pate. In the Riverlands.
Are there successful Pates? Or are they all pig farmers?
A lot. When they were of when the Brotherhood was throwing charges at Sandor Clegane, remember before his duel with Beric Dondarrion, there was multiple Paites they mentioned that had died. And and the remember just last chapter, actually, the epilogue to A Storm of Swords, when Thomas Evans is talking to Merit and says, "I sang at your daughter's wedding. Her husband was a man named Pate, and he died fighting, trying to fight the mountain. Not good to be named Pate."
So the nominative determinism is actually happening here. I just misunderstood. What's determined by the name Pate is that you're going to die.
Right. And not of an old age, I guess. Right.
So Mollander is known as Hop Frog. That's what Lazy Leo refers to him at. We know that Mollander's father died in the Battle of the Blackwater, and he was a knight. You think this is a clue to his last name?
Well, I thought it might be, because I was just trying to think of why he would call him Hop Frog, and I thought maybe his house sigil, or, you know, his father's standard, was some sort of frog. So I did a little bit of digging, and as best as I could come up with, two houses have some sort of amphibious creature on their in their standard. Neither fit very well. Bowen Marsh's sigil, the House Marsh, is the closest. It's a bunch of green frogs on a yellow background, but they're in Northern House, so it's unlikely that his father would be of the Marsh's house and fighting in the Battle of the Blackwater.
And also, doesn't it also feel a little bit that he's too prominent? Like Leo is House Tyrell, and so he is, you know, known to be that. But right. Marsh is actually kind of a name that I know of, so he wouldn't think of himself as the son of a knight, but he would think of himself as a member of House Marsh.
Yeah, that could be. And it probably explains why neither of these options work very well. I will say, though, if Mollander is of House Marsh, the family really needs to stop entering into childless careers, because Bowen Marsh is also at the Night's Watch, and he can't have children either. Right. And he's the only known Marsh in the story. So if Mollander was a Marsh, he needs to get out of the business of becoming a maester as well. The other option is House Viperin, which has a black toad on a white lily pad on a green background. They're a Riverlands house, so again, not likely fighting on the Blackwater. So neither of those work out very well. I will say that there is a kid's game in Westeros called Hop Frog, so maybe it has something to do with that. I don't know.
Because he has a club foot, he can't play that game, and so Leo's just being mean?
Oh, yes. Maybe it's that he hops a bit because he has a club foot.
Mm.
When he walks, maybe he makes a kind of a hopping type motion.
Are we having a discussion here, or am I editing all this out?
Just this last bit?
No, everything you've said, because the answer was obvious all along.
Yes, that's a good point.
So Maester Walgrave, that's Pate's boss. We had some connections to him. We noticed that several times, well, not within this chapter, but Pate references that he occasionally gets called Cresson by Maester Walgrave. And Cresson, of course, is the maester who tried to kill Melisandre at the beginning in the prologue of A Storm of Swords. Is that the right book?
Clash of Kings.
It was Clash of Kings, was it really? Because that 2 books ago that happened. Yeah. So much water under that bridge. It's incredible.
Chet was a prologue of Storm of Swords.
He was, yeah.
He is also another prologue character who did not survive his prologue.
Well, Mr. Much Walgrave like did survive his. So.
Yes. He also, it's mentioned that he taught Yandel to read and write. And you might be saying, who is Yandel? I've never heard of
you
this
Yandel
before.
You know I am.
Well, Yandel is the maester who wrote A World of Ice and Fire, which is the book that Ilio and Linda wrote with George Martin.
Oh.
There is a maester who supposedly wrote this book. His name was Yandel. And in the preface to A World of Ice and Fire. Yandel explains how he came to the Citadel as a found baby. And as he grew older and expressed interest in learning, Walgrave taught him to read and write.
Ah, very good.
So, excellent. Yeah.
So are we saying that Maester Yandel is Elio and Linda, and Maester Walgrave is, in fact, George Martin?
We'll be right back.
This episode is sponsored by Audible. To get a free audiobook, or two if you're an Amazon Prime member, go to our exclusive URL, audibletrial.com/ghostsharrenhal. You can find the link in our show notes. Well, there's actually another maester named Gildane, who is kind of the voice of George Martin within A World of Ice and Fire.
Oh, there you go. In the lockbox that belongs to Walgrave, there is a gauntlet of a prince, but Walgrave can't remember whose. Do you have any clues who it might be, McKelly? It feels like the kind of thing you would know at your fingertips.
Well, there's some speculation out there. It's never exactly stated, but there is a prince who trained at the Citadel for several years, earned 6 links, and then left. I just mentioned him a few minutes ago. Prince Oberyn Martell of Dorne.
Oh.
So that he is the leading vote-getter on who it might be. Some people thought it might be Rhaegar, but I can't think of any particular association between Rhaegar and the Citadel. He was a very studious young man early on. But I don't think he ever had any plans of becoming a maester.
But more on all this in the spoiler section, right? Later on.
Yes, yes.
Okay. And how do you get to listen to the spoiler section, McKelly?
You join some of our highest sustainer tiers get you access to the spoiler section.
Good to know. I might do that. All right. So the obsidian candles are thought to have burned in history, but haven't burned for hundreds of years. The Citadel students spend their last night before they take their vows with 3 such candles in an otherwise dark room. They can spend the night trying to light those candles, or they can just go to sleep if they want. There's no pressure to do anything. Supposed to teach them a little humility that while they are learning all of this knowledge, there are still things that are beyond them. When lit, they are supposed to have significant magical powers. I've heard like far-seeing and things like that can be achieved
with them. Yeah, yeah.
So is this more evidence of what we saw several times previously, which is that the dragons have increased the level of magic in the world.
Yes. And now, go on and tell all our friends what it was that you remembered. When I read this in the notes, when you put them in there, I was like, he remembered that?
Oh, yeah. I didn't totally remember it. I will say, I'll say that this chapter, because it is so out of the blue, you know, we're in a place we've never been before. We're talking about characters we've never met before. There was so little for us to go on, because usually it's making connections to the other chapters is what we do. But this was kind of out of the blue, so I really had to do some research on this chapter, and I actually did some research. And we have heard one previous mention of obsidian candles, and that was when Dany burned the House of the Undying. And it was reported that in Carth, an obsidian candle was burning in the House of Urathon Nightwalker.
And yes,
yet more spoilers will be discussed about Urathon Nightwalker.
I was like, what? He remembered Urathon Nightwalker? How did he remember that?
Did not remember that. Do you remember that was said?
I did, and I was so I went wow. I thought in my own notes on my iPad, I thought I would I put it in there to remind about Urathon Nightwalker, and here it was. You already had it in there.
Yeah.
But, you know, so the tradition with the glass candles, with the acolytes standing vigil, I wonder, you know, has it lost some original purpose? You know, maybe there was an original reason for doing so that
they were actually sorting the good ones from the mediocre ones.
Yeah, right. Maybe,
the wheat from the chaff.
It feels like it's kind of a big deal that these candles are burning now.
Yeah, and presumably.
You know, they're made of obsidian. And what we've learned about obsidian recently is that it's associated with both fire, because it's frozen fire, and ice, because it kills others. So, you know, maybe the burning signifies a return of dragons and others, you know.
You know who this might be good news for is Thoros of Myr. He could head to the wall, and he could get himself a burning dragonglass sword.
Yes, he wouldn't even, yeah, he wouldn't even need to waste a, you know, a regular old sword.
Yeah. So, sort of the Simon, if you will, of this chapter is Leo, lazy Leo, who we find out later on is a Tyrell. Do you know how he fits in with the rest of the Tyrells? It's, again, the kind of thing you know.
Well, yeah, so they mention in the chapter he is the son of Morian Tyrell, who is uncle to Mace Tyrell.
So he's cousins with Mace.
Yeah, which makes Leo Mace's cousin.
Yeah.
Like, first cousin. And first cousin. I kind of got the impression that Leo was kind of young.
Yeah.
So, you know, but you know.
Cousins can be different generations, it's possible.
Yeah, and Leo has an older brother. He's now deceased, but his older brother, Luther Tyrell, could have been significantly older than Leo. Yeah. In fact, you might find it odd that the only living son of Morian Tyrell is training to become a maester, because you think, uh-oh, well, the line is going to end there. But Luther, Leo's older brother, actually had two sons and a daughter, so the line can continue through them.
Also, it's the secondary line. The main Tyrell line is alive, yes, and well, courtesy of Mace and his sons. Although, of course, one of them has become a Kingsguard.
Yeah, so yeah. Anyway, that's what we know about Leo. Now,
I did note that Leo was sort of casually racist towards Alaris, who presumably is brown-skinned, being Summer Islander and Dorthian. There hasn't been a lot of racism in the books. I mean, but there aren't that many ethnically diverse races. So perhaps we're going to see more of it if the people of Dorne come into it a bit more.
Yeah, you know, yeah, we've met Jalabar Zo, Chataya. They're both from the Summer Isles. And Aliyaya, Chataya's daughter, is of Summer Islander heritage, but was born in King's Landing. I can't recall any specific kind of racism that I've noticed in the interactions that we've seen with them. But also, you know, the Tyrells very much dislike the Dornish, so possibly Leo doesn't like Alaris to begin with and takes any opportunity to disparage him.
And we don't like Leo anyway, so...
Right, he is kind of a jerk.
So news of Dany's dragons is clearly spreading. These novices have heard about them through sailors, and that makes a perfect sense. Sailors are probably good gossips. But they're all... Mollander makes the point that whilst these stories differ, and that was, I think, Armin was poo-pooing the idea that dragons existed in the world, but Mollander makes the good... And Armin was saying the stories aren't all the same, but Mollander was like, yeah, but the core of the stories is the same, that these dragons do exist. The Citadel... maybe, especially with the lighting of this candle, might want to start investigating this to see if it's true.
Agreed. Yeah. I mean, if you know, there's several different versions going around, like you mentioned, like dragons in Karth, dragons in Ashai, dragons in Marine, Dothraki dragons freeing slaves, which make it sound like it's made up, but in reality, it's just Dany progressing through Essos.
Yes. Moving.
And,
yes.
And I have to say, for how much of a jerk Leo is, he is pretty spot on in his details, not only with Dany hatching three dragons, but the reemergence of darker things and old powers awakening. And it seems like he's getting his information from Marwyn the Mage. And, you know, Marwyn has spent a lot of time in Essos. And we've actually heard of Marwyn a couple times.
Yes, we have.
Miri Mazdor told Dany she learned about human anatomy from a maester named Marwyn. And then Qyburn told Jaime that he believed in the possibility of ghosts, but that only Marwyn was the only archmaester that gave the idea any attention. So, and I was just saying this, we haven't seen the last of Marwyn either.
Exciting. Okay, so... the big mystery of this chapter is the alchemist, because we definitely haven't heard of any of the other characters. So is the alchemist someone that we might recognize? And I didn't know, but I went hunting. And I I believe we might have found him, because back in a Clash of Kings, in an Arya chapter where they free Harrenhal from Armory Lorch's grip. I read this description to you if I can. I'm going to skip the name, because it'll all become apparent what the name is, but he passed a hand down his face from forehead to chin, and where it went, he changed. His cheeks grew fuller, his eyes closer, his nose hooked, and a scar appeared on his right cheek where no scar had been before. And when he shook his head, his long straight hair, half red and half white, dissolved away to reveal a cap of tight black curls. Now that was back then, and here's the description of the alchemist in this chapter. He had a young man's face, ordinary, with full cheeks and the shadow of a beard. A scar showed faintly on his right cheek. He had a hooked nose and a mat of dense black hair that curled tightly around his ears. Ladies and gentlemen, may
Sounds
I present
familiar.
Jaqen H'ghar is our
Yes.
alchemist.
How about that?
Yeah, and I love the fact that you have to actually work for it, because, you know, reading it, I couldn't remember who the heck it was.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. If you read it just the first time, who remembered what description Arya gave of Jaqen after he changed
That's
appearance?
That's what we're here for. It's not right. a spoiler, because it happened in the past. We can tell you about what happened in the past.
Yes. It's all laid out there. You have to know what to look for. That's all.
So this is almost certainly Jaqen H'ghar. What does he want in the Citadel? What does he want with a key that can open any room in the Citadel?
What is his mission in Westeros entirely? If you trace it back to when we first met him, when we first met him, Yoren had just rescued him from the Black Cells. So first off, if he's a faceless man, which we had discussed because he's changing his face, how did he end up getting himself thrown in the Black Cells? Was that intentional? Or is that something that unfortunately happened to him?
Well, you know what? When Janice Slint ran the Gold Cloaks, they solved crimes.
That's right, they did.
Just being a faceless man didn't get away from those guys.
So he gets out of the Black Cells, and then he's stuck with Yoren and the Night's Watch recruits in that rolling cage. Okay, not much he can do there. He's chained to a biter.
Chaining your face isn't going to help you right now. You're in the cage.
But then when Yoren dies, he's freed. But he doesn't go off about whatever journey he was originally set upon, because we find him at Harrenhal mixing it up with Rorg and Biter again. So he has to repay this debt to Arya when she freed him. Okay, I get that. But then he goes off to do whatever's next. So what is he doing? Was that all part of his plan, or was he sidetracked from this being his true plan?
Mm.
It's clear his mission now is something to do with the Citadel. It isn't clear what it is.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so now we're going to take a break and talk about spoilers. Join us at the higher levels of the Buy Me a Coffee Sustainers if you want to hear what we're about to say.
Yeah, we've got some really juicy spoilers to discuss here.
Yeah. All right, thanks. Good spoilery. Okay, do you have some background for us?
I do. I tried to look up Pate the Spotted Pig Boy, but literally it is just what we learn about in this chapter. So unfortunately, there wasn't more I could talk about there. So I thought I would
tell you what I could do. I could dream up some fan fiction of the story of Pate the Pig Boy.
Please do. During the spoiler section, we were talking about Simon's plagiarized dream about Maester secretly running the running the realm. So I thought I would talk a bit about the workings of the Citadel. And first, I wanted to talk about Archmaesters, because there's a lot of talk about them in this chapter. So how do Archmaesters differ from your run-of-the-mill Maester? Well, Archmaesters are Maesters who have demonstrated mastery of a particular subject. In recognition of this achievement, an Archmaester receives a mask, a ring, and a rod in the middle, corresponding to the link of the Maester's chain, which signifies their expertise on a topic. Actually, it came up a couple times, I think twice in this chapter, Pate mentioned rods and rings and masks and stuff, and it didn't give any background as to why, so right. That's why. For example, Pate tells us that Archmaester Rhyam's Ring, Rod, and Mask were yellow gold, but they had no Valyrian steel link. What that means is that Ryam is an expert in math and economy, but hasn't spent time studying the higher mysteries, which was represented by Valyrian steel.
Right.
The Archmaesters are the ones who teach the students at the Citadel in their subject of expertise. They also judge whether a novice or an acolyte has shown enough knowledge on their subject to receive a link for their chain. Now, about chains and links, there are several types of metal links that get a mention in this chapter. Here is a list of the known link metals and what they stand for. We actually did this back in a brand chapter, back in Clash of Kings, I think it was, or it was a while ago. So,
I mean, unless you're really binging, you're not going to remember that, I feel.
Right.
I certainly didn't.
So yeah, so I'm going to start with Black Iron because that's for Ravenry, and Archmaester Walgrave was apparently the greatest Ravener of all time.
Pate was so close.
Yeah, he might have followed in his footsteps someday. So yeah, a Black Iron is for Ravenry. Yellow Gold is for math and economy, like I just mentioned. And as I mentioned, Archmaester Ryam had his expertise is in that category. And Leo makes a snide remark to Rune that he shouldn't go for his golden link when Rune questions three, when Leo mentions how many dragons Danny has. He says, it's the number between two and four. Don't go for your gold link yet. Silver gets a mention in this chapter. That is for medicine and healing. And Armin says that Archmaester Ebros is speaking on properties of urine for anyone interested in their silver link. And it's not stated in the chapter, but Pate's second attempt at earning his link was with Ebros, so it was likely for medicine.
But things he'd learned looking after Maester Walgrave.
Yes, baby. Valyrian steel, as I mentioned, is for higher mysteries, which is kind of Marwyn's expertise. Bronze is either for astronomy or astrology, or
don't be like Carson.
I'm just saying it's possible it could be for one of those things. And Pate's first attempt at a link was for knowledge of the heavens, so possibly it was for this bronze link here. Copper, Alaris was celebrating this night for earning his copper link.
Archery?
Not sure. Yeah, I know, right? It possibly could be for history. It's not quite clear. Then the other one we know is iron is for Warcraft. There's also platinum, brass, electrum, lead, pewter, red gold, steel, and tin. So there's 15 known links. So 15 known subjects taught at the Citadel. However, there's 21 known current Archmaesters of the Citadel. Only 8 of whose specialties we know of. What we don't know is if each Archmaester specializes in a separate subject or if multiple Archmaesters specialize in the same subject.
All righty.
Well, that's what I know.
I feel like we should get a link on our chain for all that.
I agree.
Yeah. Comparison with the television show, I am 99% sure that absolutely none of that scene happened. There was no mention of it at all. I couldn't remember it or I couldn't find it, but I didn't look too hard because I'm pretty sure it was...
Yeah,
no. But I can't remember. That's two in a row after basically never missing at all until now. That's two chapters in a row that just didn't happen in the TV show.
Yeah, and it's probably going to be more common as we go along.
This is much less of an omission, I feel, because last chapter, the epilogue to A Storm of Swords, had a huge plot point in it that the TV show chose not to bother. I don't think there's a huge plot point here, does it? Interesting plot points, but it's not the same magnitude.
And whatever Jack and Hagar is working on here could be done in it. Shown in a different
way. In a million other ways.
Yeah.
Pedantry. I couldn't see anything in particular, but I will say that Alaris was firing these arrows towards the river, And, I mean, how flush do you have to be to just fire arrows off into the river? They're not that cheap, presumably.
I had
40-dollar parking, but, you know, not cheap.
You know, I had the same thought, and I was also thinking, hypothetically, if you were missing your target, if you were, you know, shooting a bow and arrow, and you were missing your target high and to the right, what advice do you think Alaris might give for you to help you fix that issue?
Stop firing them towards the road or the river.
All right. That was a reference to Simon's one time getting archery lessons.
Which, I mean, again, I can't fault the kid. He was absolutely right. If I'm missing high right, aim low left. But I felt there might be technique things he could have showed me that would have improved.
Yes.
You know, that's all I'm saying. All
right.
So news and notes. I haven't read any of this, so go on, tell me what you've got here.
Well, we just have a bit of an odd anomaly. We'd love your help with addressing, and not you, Simon, but you, our lovely listeners. According to our stats, 72% of our downloads come from Spotify, which is absolutely awesome. We are blowing the competition away on that platform, and we thank you all so much for the more than 500 five-star reviews. Please keep that coming. That said, the anomaly is that the most used device to listen to us is the iPhone, yet we're lagging behind the competition on Apple Podcasts regarding ratings and reviews. Assuming that everyone with an iPhone has access to Apple Podcasts, if you'd please just open the app, give us a quick five-star rating. You don't even have to leave us a review if you don't want to. We'd appreciate that so much. But regardless of wherever you're listening to us, thank you for doing so.
Yeah, thanks a lot. And special thanks to Seth G 1978 on Apple Podcasts, no less, who did leave us a review. Wonderful. I've listened to the story about 8 times and I've always wanted a show like this. Your wife was right about your chemistry. Which one of our wives? I'm worried about that. I think they both think
probably,
that, actually.
Probably, yeah. I think so.
Yeah. I can listen to you guys talk all day. That's what our wives have to suffer. In fact, I will at work. Loved your take and Jamie and his one job, LOL. Now, I've been puzzling about this. When we joked about Jamie's one job, what were we talking about exactly?
I was thinking the same thing when I read this. I believe it's talking about Jamie's one job was to keep the king alive, the king that he killed.
Yes.
I think
that's
the one.
It. That's it. That makes a lot of sense, yes. And that is funny. I'm glad we said that. Carrying on with what Seth said, let's hope by the time you get to the end of A Dance to Dragons that Winds of Winter will be out. But if not, you should have 2 seasons of Fire and Blood House of the Dragons to do. Yeah, that's possible. I'm looking forward to binging this show at work. I absolutely love the show so far. Please don't stop. Well, thank you, Seth. That's why we do it, just to keep people like you happy. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much. Great review. That was really nice to hear. Thank you.
All right, let's draw a line under this one. So not much to draw on here, but Jack and Hagar, it appears, is up to something. Few clues as to what that might be. Unless, I have a left-field theory. It was just a convoluted assassination attempt on Pate. He'd been paid by somebody who'd Rosie to get rid of Pate.
It was Leo.
But Leo could outspend Pate. He didn't need to kill him.
Right, that is true, yeah. You know, one thing that struck me about the conversation between Pate and the alchemist is that the alchemist calls himself a stranger, which, ironically, the stranger takes people to the other world when they die.
Mm-hmm.
So, mm-hmm. You know, it seems like Pate bit on the coin, and that's what poisoned him, right? I mean...
Yes, I certainly thought that.
Yeah, and so we're wondering, what does the alchemist in Jaqen... or Jaqen want to do here in the Citadel? We don't know, but he could change his appearance. We know this. We've seen this happen. So maybe when he wants to change his appearance, the person who he wants to change his appearance to look like has to die before he can take his appearance. So it certainly seems like he needs this key, right? But maybe he also needed the identity of a person inside the Citadel, and he thought he could kill 2 birds with 1 stone, quite literally here.
Interesting. And actually, that does go to the fact that he was so... He'd kept his face hidden from Pate. But once he got the key from him, he then showed him his face, which feels like the wrong thing to do unless you always planned for Pate to meet his demise because you needed him to, because that was the other half of your plan. Your plan was the key and Pate's face.
Yes, that's... Interesting. We'll find out, hopefully, as time goes on here. But, you know, we do know he can change his face, and we know he was after a key to the Citadel. But, you know, maybe him walking around with this, how he currently looks, he would get, accosted if he tried to walk into the Citadel and open doors he has no business opening. So maybe he needed a particular face that was familiar inside the Citadel.
Just, he really wanted to wash Archmaester Walgrave's small clothes.
It's a bucket list item for him. Literally.
All right. So next week, we're headed to the Iron Island, and we have a Greyjoy point of view coming.
Yeah.
Is Theon back after all this time?
Or could
Theon
it be...
Theon presumed dead?
Yeah, or could it be a new Greyjoy POV? I guess our listeners will have to tune in next week to find out.
In the meantime, there's four ways that you could help us. You could leave us a positive review, as SethG1978 did. You could buy merchandise at ghostsofharrenhal.threadless.com. You could buy us a cup of Arbor Gold at buymeacoffee.com/ghostharrenhal. Join us at any of the various sustainer levels, the higher ones of which get you access to the spoiler chat. There's a tier to match your budget. Or you could just make a donation directly to us on our website, ghostsofharrenhal.buzzsprout.com.
And if you're looking for more ways to interact with us, keeping up on the latest Ghosts of Harrenhal news and developments, well, you can check us out on our social media. You can follow us on Twitter at Ghost Harrenhal. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Discord, and YouTube.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.